Welcome to the Curious Performer Podcast, the podcast for performers who want to grow. Are you ready? Ready to improve your show, to grow your business? Are you ready to build your brand? Then turn up the volume and get ready to hear from some of the best performers in the business. I'm your host, Keith Tussing, and I'll be asking the questions we're all curious about. Today's guest's love of entertaining was sparked performing made-up shows to anyone who would stand still long enough, family, friends, and even neighbors. Since then, he has been hooked on all things comedy and ventriloquism. His bright, fresh approach and passion for what he does has endeared him to many pantomime audiences in the UK. He has appeared at the Vent Haven Ventriloquist Convention, Tricks in the Sticks, Camp Bestival, the New Alexandria Theatre, and the Museum of Comedy in London. All the way from the UK, rising superstar, ventriloquist, and family entertainer, Max Fulham. Max, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me, Keith.
Oh, I'm so glad you took the time to be here today. And we're going to learn a little bit about Max. I don't know Max, except for what I've read and seen in video. But today, I hope we learn a whole lot about what you are doing over there in the UK.
Yes, hopefully you will. Hopefully I can give you a little insight.
Awesome, awesome. So let's talk about that. The idea that you just started performing for family and friends, and now you're on television over there.
Yeah, it's got a sort of similar feel to sort of people who saw, you know, their granddad pull a coin out from behind someone's ear and they started magic as a hobby. It's that sort of thing, because it is a speciality act of ventriloquism. It is one of those variety arts like magic. It is something you can just pick up as a kid and have as a plaything. And that's sort of how it evolved for me, really. I was bought a puppet when I was 9 years old for Christmas. My parents thought they were buying me a puppet, not a career. And I just taught myself in front of my bedroom mirror. I'd been interested in magic and sort of dancing and singing and all sort of musical theatre, that sort of stuff. I'd always loved just entertaining, but ventriloquism for me was when it really sort of stuck and I knew I could make people laugh with it, and that was really exciting for me.
So your parents just bought you a puppet and you started running with it, and now we're here today with this is what you do for a living.
Yeah, so they bought me a puppet for Christmas. I really liked it. I love puppets. I think they're great, and still do, and have far too many, but that's another point. Yeah, so they bought me the puppet, and I saw a ventriloquist on YouTube, because I'm of that internet generation. I can't say, oh, I saw this great performer on this amazing theatrical stage. I say, oh, I saw one on YouTube, which I did. I saw a ventriloquist on YouTube, and I went, oh my goodness, this is really interesting, because it's not like the Muppets where the puppeteer is underneath hiding. You can see the person. And they're standing right next to them. This is really interesting. I like this. This is cool. And being having that sort of childlike naivety where you can take on the world, you can do anything. I went, I'll do that. I'll try that. So I did. I spent time in front of my mirror practicing, trying not to move my lips. And then it was a process of doing it in the classroom, entering school talent shows. And yeah, sometimes on a sunny day, I might set up a table on the grass, and the other kids in the street would have to sit through me doing some half-baked act with various magic tricks that I knew and puppets. But yeah, I've always loved entertaining, and it sort of came and it emerged very naturally to me.
Yeah, yeah. Now, outside of puppets, you also do some acting, right?
Yeah, so I can act. I can act. Oh, I'm so sad. That was some of my acting for the listeners there. That was me being sad. but I can act. And acting is a huge part of ventriloquism, which people don't realize it's such a multitasking thing. You know, you've got the not moving your lips part, the very literal ventriloquism, but you've got the puppetry, the acting of the dialogue and the reacting of what the puppet's just said, even though you've heard it 1,000 times before and you know what's coming. You know, you have to act it. So it is a bit of a masterclass in acting, because it's performing a duologue as a solo artist. It's an interesting little mind game to play, and it can take people a little while to get their head around. And when they, you know, they watch the act, and then I've had other people in the industry, people who actors, as you might call them, they watch my act, enjoy my act, and then would come up to me and they'd ask a question, and then it would sort of dawn on them to what extent it is just me doing it. You know, that they'd say, oh, that was great, that was really funny. But then in our conversation, they'd go, oh, so you are, it's like you're juggling two And it's like, yeah, I'm playing both characters. It is acting. And to add to that as well, when you're playing the other character, you can't act with your own face or your own body. You have to act through this puppet, through the expressions that the puppet can make. So that's how you express that through the puppetry. So there is a lot of acting skills involved in what I do, as well as just pulling ridiculous faces, which is another thing I like to do.
But now, pantomime, for those of us that are not Europeans, what does that mean when you've been in the pantomime shows?
Yeah, so in the States, I believe pantomime is very much man in a box sort of thing, which is what would be referred to as simply mime over here. But pantomimes are sort of very traditional festive shows, so usually around Christmas, that happen in theatres up and down the country, hundreds of productions every year, but also amateur productions, you know, village hall, community groups putting on pantomimes. They follow classic stories, Cinderella, Snow White, Aladdin, but not the Aladdin you know from Disney, and a different version that's set in China, because that's how that pantomime evolved. And so pantomimes have been going on since the 1700s in some form or another, and then they've evolved and evolved and evolved. And they're still a very traditional show today. People know what they're getting, and they go along because they know some of the routines, because the routines will be the same, or there'll be the same structures. There's audience interaction. They know when to shout out. They can get involved, and it's very often a child's first experience of theatre here in the UK. So that's, you know, as a pantomime performer, we're all very aware that we're giving a lot of people their first theatrical experience, because it is sort of something for everyone. You know, the kids will enjoy it because there's lots of silliness, slapstick comedy, ridiculous humor. But there are also sort of innuendos for the adults, things that will go over the kids' heads, and entertainment stars. You know, that you've got your best variety acts are doing pantos, but as well as that, you get celebrities in pantos who are, you know, big on huge posters to draw in the crowd. So it is amazing. You can go and watch, you know, a celebrity play the fairy godmother. It really does draw from sort of modern culture, and the script is weaved in with sort of semi sort of political jokes, or jokes about the time, or jokes about the year. So it is very topical as well. So it just sort of rounds off the year and is it's a real staple of Britishness, I'd say. Yeah,
Britishness. Okay, and roles you've played in that. What roles have you played?
There tends to be sort of stock roles in panto. So you'll always have a dame, which is the sort of mother character, but she's always played by a man. And then you've got the comic, who's the idiot, which is who I tend to play with my monkey. Usually, my monkey usually joins me in panto. And maybe a few other talking things. And then you've got the hero and the sort of the person in distress, a princess of some sort maybe, and then sort of the emperor, the princess's father. It's those classic stock characters from the land of fairy tales, really, those sorts of stories. So I usually play the comic. So it's very much like I'm almost like a... It's like a brother figure to the kids. There's never a fourth wall in panto. It's always interaction from the start. We're always referencing the audience. We're very much with them. It's like, come on board, we're going to have a great time. So, you know, I get to interact with them. There's often a sense of anytime I come on, I'll say something and the kids will have something to shout back. So there's a call and response. Maybe they're like in my gang. That's often a thing. So in your sort of opening spot, you say, do you want to be in my gang? And they'll be in your gang for the rest of the show. So you've got that sort of camaraderie with the kids. You've got the kids on side and you can have great fun with that. So I get to make people laugh, which is great. I mean, that's what I love to do. That is literally what I see my purpose as, is making people laugh. So that's wonderful.
Oh, that sounds like so much fun. I would love to see one of those. When you say stock characters, you're talking about the comic, but are there specific roles for that? Or
yes, so the comic role would change with each story. So in Snow White, it's usually called Muddles. In Aladdin, it's usually Wishy Washy, which is Aladdin's brother. So Aladdin and Wishy Washy are brothers, and Widow Twanky is their mother. So it's usually sort of the brother or friend. In Cinderella, it's Buttons, and he is... He's often sort of like a bellboy, and he's in love with Cinderella, but of course she falls in love with the prince. So he has a bit of pathos to him, as well as being a sort of silly character. He gets friend zoned quite severely.
You know, for those that are listening, Max is all of 21 years old and just blowing up over there in the UK. Explain to me, you know, you went from doing these small shows to bigger venues. How did that work for you?
Yeah, so I mean, I've gone from doing school talent shows to huge pantomimes in big theatres and other big shows and even some telly. So it's been an immense journey. I mean, I can't believe the things I've done. I've been incredibly lucky to have the opportunities I've had and have the sort of trajectory I've had, which is really cool. It's been quite natural for the most part in terms of, you know, kids parties led to local events led to charity events. Then someone sees you at a charity event and they book you for a charity event in a theater. And that's where I met my manager. And then I went on a summer show and it's like, it has sort of that very natural progression. Then I did my first pantomime and every year since I've done a pantomime, it's been a slightly bigger production. So it has been sort of that steady increase, but the things on that increase have just been mind-blowingly exciting. I think, you know, meeting my manager was obviously a huge turning point for me in terms of how the level of work I was doing. Before that, you know, I was doing children's parties and I loved them so much, and they were the best learning ground for me because, you know, I was my own boss. I was able to do the stuff I liked, and they're cutthroat as well. You have to get them on side. You can't be losing a hall full of kids. It's sink or swim. You have to get them on side. So it's an incredible learning ground. And I really loved those. And, you know, I still perform for family audiences. So that's very much, that training has very much done me well. But then when I met my manager on a charity variety show, she was helping me get sort of different sorts of gigs. So theatre gigs where, for example, a summer season, you know, in a theatre by the sea. Summertime variety show, which was lovely, then panto, and then started to do the holiday parks, which isn't a reference that I know translates to America, but they're sort of like holiday resorts. So, you know, there's sort of attractions and swimming pools and all sorts on these sites, but there's also entertainment venues, and I've been working them a lot in the last few years. So yeah, it's been amazing how varied the work can be when you're doing this, because I sort of straddle the variety world, sort of that slightly old fashioned world where variety shows were a thing, which they're not really anymore, which is a shame. But I also straddle that sort of stand up comedy world where, you know, I can do a comedy club, and it's a really interesting thing because I'm sort of in the middle. So I can go and do more sorts of performances. It's an amazing array of jobs I get to do. Yeah.
Okay, and this is always using puppets, or always ventriloquism, or sometimes straight stand-up. Tell me about that.
So the vast majority of what I do at the moment is all with puppets and working as a vent. I do some vent bits without traditional puppets that I have on my hand, and I do a few sort of talky bits in between, or prop bits, because I do love a bit of prop comedy, because technically, you know you could consider ventriloquists to be a prop comic, because they are, you know, is a puppet a prop? And Other Philosophical Questions is the name of my next book. I mostly work with the puppets, and I love doing that, but I'm always interested to do some stuff without the puppets. Like I do little sketches and videos, and some of those are without puppets. So yeah, it's a mixture, but mostly puppets, mostly vent and mostly puppets, because I love it. And it's different. And people haven't seen vents live, especially working live. People haven't seen ventriloquists live. You know, you get people coming up and saying, oh, I've seen ventriloquists on YouTube and stuff, but I've never seen one live. So that was really cool. And you know, From a sort of business perspective, which isn't something I look at things from very often, I probably should look at it a bit more, because this has been a hobby. I just sort of, I'm here now in the business. I'm like, okay, sometimes you have to put your business head on. But if you look at it from a business perspective, I mean, ventriloquists are rarer than straight stand-ups. So you do have a sort of slight, you do stand out slightly more if you are doing something slightly different. And even within the world of ventriloquism, I always try and do something that's slightly different there as well, and try and bring in new ideas.
Yeah, and going down that road a little further, specific characters you use, puppets you've created, tell us about your cast.
So my cast is very varied, from sort of puppets you'd expect to see in a ventriloquist act, such as an old man, which is my granddad, and he has developed even more and more and more until we have sort of quite a grandfather-grandson relationship going on. We there's that sort of that family love there. I sort of really care for him, but he's also a really naughty old man, and so there's that element as well where I have to try and rein him back, and I'm sort of, he has me in hysterics as what he's saying, and I can't sort of control this because I have to respect him because he's my elder. You've got that sort of dynamic going on, which is a really interesting one. And you've also got my monkey, Gordon, my monkey. Another sort of animal that is fairly common in ventriloquism, but my monkey is a northern monkey. He speaks like he's from the north of England, and he's very sort of twangy nasal, very cheeky, like a monkey, and is almost always sort of derailing my show, sort of fiddling with, like in my current show, he fiddles with, like when we're in a venue, he'll fiddle with the lights, and he'll like make friends with the lighting programmer so that then he'll start changing the lights without me. He'll just mess with my show. That's essentially his role, is to cause a bit of anarchy, which I love. I love comedy chaos. That's a real thing I'm passionate about because I just think it's so funny. It's a bit farcical. You've got things going wrong. I love that. I really do. But then I've got slightly different things. I've got a puppet without a head. I've got a talking waste bin. I like to take things in a slightly different direction as well, away from your traditional puppets. So yeah, it's a very varied cast, I'd say.
Good, good. I think there are some very standard things that we see all the time, but the headless puppet routine, which I have seen you do, is hilarious.
Thank you. Cheers.
What about branding? That's a buzzword in our business right now. Everybody talks about branding.
It is, isn't it?
Branding. Is that something you think about, something you actively work on?
It's something I should think about more. I'm not. I mean, I do admire sort of, you know, I was at the CAX conference, which is where we've connected through the brilliant CAX conference, which they did virtually, which was, I was skeptical at first, but my goodness, you'd be hard pushed to find a better virtual conference out there. It was incredible.
Totally agree.
The way they did that. That was absolutely amazing. But yes. What was I saying? Branding. That was it. Branding. I don't think about it enough, and I admire the people at CAX, you know, the people who are just absolutely smashing it. They've got a really sort of pinned image, and the working so well as a business. I very much, this is literally me. So it's very much like I don't always think of it from a business perspective, because it is me, and it was a hobby, and now it's sort of my life. Rather than a sort of job, I can go, right, I'm going to be at work now, which is, of course, you occasionally have to think about branding and stuff like that. But branding, I think I'd probably think about branding most in terms of what it means in terms of my stage persona, so what I am like on stage. And that's still developing. You know, I'm 21. I've been professional for a few years now. And occasionally I would sort of beat myself up and go, you know, you need to be sorted now. You're in the professional world. You need to be sorted. You need to be knowing exactly what you're doing and who you are on stage. But of course, that's going to develop with time. And I'm always finding out different ways I like to be on stage and who I like to be, which has taken a backseat. Of course it has, because I've been working on the characters that are sitting next to me. You know, I've been working on the characters that are on my hand, making these wacky, wild characters. And then you actually need to think about yourself as a ventriloquist and what your dynamic is and what your persona is. Because when the puppet goes in the box and you have to talk to the audience, I mean, what are you? You can't just be some bland blob of flesh on stage. You need to be something. And that's why, you know, I have developed sort of, like many people, it's a heightened me. It's me on speed on a good day is what it is. It's it's energetic. It's silly, somewhat chaotic, but trying to keep control. A little bit cheeky occasionally, and just overall friendly. I love the. It's very much like panto, but I love the dynamic of. It's not like performer audience. I like the dynamic of coming out and saying, right, we're all together in this room. Come with me. We're going to have a great time. Just hop on board. We're going to have so much fun. I've got some really cool and weird stuff to show you. Hop on board and we're going to have a great time. I love that dynamic of getting a whole room united and sort of with you. So that's a lovely feeling. So I think my persona does sort of encapsulate that sort of, we're all going to be mates. Come along. It's going to be fun. So I think that's as far as I think in terms of branding. The only other thing I can think of when I think of branding, which is it's such like a businessy corporate word, I feel like I should have like a PowerPoint if I use the word branding. I feel like I should have PowerPoints pie charts. I should have a pie chart if I'm using the word branding. That's how I think. Colorful. I think everything I do is colorful. I like wearing colors. I like sitting around colors. I like things to be colorful. I think that's fun. I think cool isn't necessarily colorful now. I mean, I take, for example, and this is sort of in both personal and professional, I like wearing colorful things because I just find wearing, you know, a plain black t-shirt very boring, or a plain white t-shirt. And that seems to be the cool thing. And I've never been cool. I never hit that stage in school where I was like, I'm going to be cool now. I was very sort of inhibitionless. And if anything, the inhibitions have come now I'm a bit older, which is, that's a tricky thing to juggle. But, you know, you walk into a clothes shop and you walk through the women's department and there's all these colorful clothes, and you walk to the men's department and it's just navy, black, beige, white. And I know that's fashionable, but it's very dull, and it's not for me. I want to be colorful. I just find wearing colors happy. And so in terms of branding, I think everything I do, I'd like things to be colorful and bright and bold. And, you know, people would often say, oh, Max, you dress like a children's TV presenter. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, one, give me that job. But two, I don't mind. I think actually that there should be more adults that dress like this. I don't know why adults can't get on board with that. And, you know, they do. People look at me and they go, oh, cool, kids entertainer. But then they'll watch the show and it's mostly been the adults that are laughing, or I'm doing a purely adult show or something. I like just bringing a bit of brightness to an otherwise sort of jeans and t-shirt style, if that makes sense.
Perfect sense. Hey, what about now, like I said, Max is young. Social media has been around all of your life, practically. How do you use social media in your business?
I use it far more than I want to. I'm not a particular... This pandemic has made me absolutely hate social media. I'll just say it outright. That's the worst business advice anyone could ever hear. But I really don't like it at the moment. And just calling back to my previous answer, I am in no way a fashion advisor. Don't take fashion advice from me. It's just what I wear. But onto social media. It's so important now. It's so important. You're expected to have a social media presence, and I do, and I work on that. And at the moment, you know, it is pretty much my only outlet. And I very much see it as that, rather than me going, I need to keep up my profile. Obviously, I feel that pressure, and that pressure is horrible. Especially when, you know, algorithms and stuff will keep showing the magicians who create the perfect length of video, and give away a trick, and, you know, just good looking magicians doing tricks everyone's seen before and giving them away. I'm sick of that. Or, you know, the ones where they're holding up a piece of paper and then they turn to the next page and they're trying to read your mind, and it's just one of those number ones, and I'm so bored of that. I didn't come on here to slag people off, Keith. I'm so sorry. I've got rather pent up. I think I'm releasing stuff. This isn't a counselling session, Max. Get your ideas together. But yes, social media is it's a great tool. It's a fantastic tool. And as I was saying, it is my outlet. I'm a creative person, and I have the need to entertain people. As I said, it's literally my purpose. I literally see it as my purpose. I'm here to make people laugh. And then when you get something like a pandemic that takes that away completely, and you can't even do it in your personal life because you don't see anyone, then it's difficult. And so you turn to social media, you start putting videos out there, not to show off, just because you really want to know you're making people laugh. It's that for me, which is a weird nuance, and it still makes me sound a bit big-headed, but that is genuinely what my motivation is. I think that's it for me. It's been my outlet for making people laugh in a different way. And the pandemic, as I said, that's been my outlet. So I made a YouTube series last year because I was tearing my hair out. It's called Drivel Peddler. It's on my YouTube, cheeky plug. And made a Christmas special for that and pulled all the stops out, bought a snow machine. And then I've just been exploring, you know, making little videos for Facebook and Instagram, and even dabbling in that world of TikTok. I mean, I may be 21, but I'm 67 inside. And, you know, my brain has a Zimmer frame sometimes. I'm a very old soul, not necessarily in a cool way where I like vintage clothes, but in a way where I'm like, oh, modern life. I was born in the wrong era. I want to be in the variety shows of yesteryear. I'm waffling. But yeah, TikTok's a weird one, but has many positives. It's really pushed creativity. People are being very creative on there, and you know, it gives the freedom for anyone to create a stupid thing and put it out into the world, and loads of people see a stupid thing. I mean, that's brilliant. I mean, it's terrible, but it's also brilliant. So yeah, I mean, recently, Keith, I'll be honest with you. Recently, I've been feeling the pressure to sort of be consistent with the online content. You know, oh, I'm doing one video a week. I'm doing a video every week. I'm making a post every minute. I'm doing, here's another photo every second for your eyes. But that's not obtainable. And when you put yourself in that position and you're trying to force it, it's not going to happen in a way that's successful. Yes, you can be cynical about it and go, oh, I know that would work on social media. I know that would get a good response. And occasionally you have to be like that. But I think it's better for you as a performer, and also better generally in the long term, to do it when it's right, and not forcing it, but just being sensible with it, knowing it's the right thing to do, knowing it's the thing that it's necessary now. You need to have an output, but not letting your quality suffer or damaging your own brand by putting out stuff that is substandard because you're going, I need to do a weekly video. Yeah, I think that's my various verbal spaff on that issue.
Well, I agree. I think that the pressure to get something out there is there. That's definitely part of it.
Yeah, it is. And I feel it. It's terrible. It's a horrible
and
feeling.
Then, it's then horrible. It is stifling to your creativity if you set yourself up for a deadline. I mean, to say, I've got to do this on this time.
Yeah, sometimes deadlines are really good. I work well with a deadline. I work well under that sort of pressure of a deadline, especially if it's externally imposed. But, you know, I at the start of this year, I went, right, I'm going to start producing more regular content because it doesn't seem like live work is coming back anytime soon. And I started a spreadsheet, and my goodness, if there is anyone out there who can create whilst also having a spreadsheet open, they are an actual wizard. They're an actual wizard, because I feel like spreadsheets suck the creativity out of my soul. It's just like looking at titles and documents and scripts and numbers. It was just like, oh, it needs to be less black and white and in a grid than that. It needs to be more free-flowing and fun.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Now, as you think about the idea of the pandemic, I mean, we all are constantly thinking about the pandemic, but what is the experience like that in the UK? I know I live in Florida, and in Florida, we're basically open to do whatever you want to do. As long as you're wearing a mask, you're good to go.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. That is crazy. It's really interesting watching America, because we are still in lockdown. We are in our third lockdown now. I mean, it doesn't necessarily feel like a lockdown because everyone's sort of used to it, and of course there are idiots, breaking the rules, but yeah, we are in a lockdown. It hasn't been particularly dealt with in the best way. So we locked down at the early March last year, and that went on until early summer, and then things eased for a bit, and I started to do a bit of work, all under sort of COVID guidelines, socially distanced audiences, and they were wonderful. It was amazing to get back to performing, as terrifying as that is, because for me, the longer the gap between performances, the more terrified I am, and I feel horrible and out of practice, and I feel like I'm not funny anymore because I haven't seen an audience in ages, and I've forgotten how that feels, and I've forgotten that it is what I love to do. I forget the feeling and I go, oh, I don't want to, there's loads of people out there and I'm not going to be good. That's me. And then we went back into a sort of a tier system, which was, so much fun. And then again, back into lockdown. So it's been full of lockdowns. And of course, virtual gigs are a thing. But if I'm honest with you, for me, the novelty of Zoom wore off quickly. And it's really difficult to do what I do over Zoom. I mean, I know that's not stopping other people, and I really admire them for doing it. I'm envious, and I just think they're brilliant, the people who are doing Zoom shows. But I really struggle with that. So yeah, videos and social media are my outlet, is to just entertain people in that way. Yeah, that's the pandemic effect, essentially. Not much work at all.
Mm.
That's everyone. You know, we're all in the same boat.
Where can people find you on YouTube or, you know, to see what you're doing right now?
Oh, yes, in the virtual world. I was going to say in real life, at home all the time. It's all we can do. But in the virtual world, on YouTube, it's Max Fulham. MaxFulham. That's my YouTube channel. Facebook, at Max Fulham Comedy. I've had to add comedy to the end of that at, because at Max Fulham was already taken by some person called Max Fulham, who isn't me. Isn't me, by the way. And do you know, I don't think that Facebook account is in use anymore. I've messaged it multiple times saying, hi, could I... I'm going off on a tangent. Twitter is at Max Fulham. Instagram is at Max Fulham. TikTok is, I don't know. I think it's at Max Fulham Comedy again, because I think that person had also created a TikTok account. But I do a lot of silly stuff on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. I do a lot of silly stuff everywhere. So you can find me on those.
Cool. And I think I will be looking some of that up to check out what you've been doing while you're in lockdown. So much fun.
Oh, thanks, Keith. It's mainly me sort of destroying and messing up my parents' house, essentially. It's just sort of strewing props and wigs everywhere.
Okay, Max, a young performer, somebody comes to you and says, hey, Max, I'm thinking about doing this as a profession. What would be your advice to them?
If a young performer came to me, and occasionally they do, and those poor souls, and they, you know, they'll say, what advice could you give me? And if it's a young person who is sort of wanting to do it, I'll sort of really drive home how important it is that they keep the hobbiness and the fun of it alive for as long as possible. Because, you don't want what is your hobby turning into work too soon, because that can have an effect on the thing you love. And, you know, you find yourself sort of down in the dumps going, oh, this is what I like, isn't it? And then you're going, no, because you've made it into too much of a job. So I think one of the sort of tips I'd give them is have fun with it. Like enjoy the art form, enjoy learning the art form, enjoy that. Put stuff out there. Of course, I'll say that. Put stuff out there on social media. Do it, I think, is a thing, do it. The more you do it, the better you're going to get. The more you do it, the more you're going to understand it and learn from it and understand yourself as a performer. Do it and have fun with it, I think, is probably, it's not necessarily the best advice, but it's probably the advice I'd give to a young performer, because, I think the pressure on young people now is pretty huge. I mean, young people are forced to grow up incredibly quickly in today's society because it's so fast moving. I mean, social media doesn't help that at all. Don't let inhibitions come in, especially if you're a creative person. Don't let them come in, because they will quash everything you have. Don't let the pressure of everything get on top of you to force you to know what you want to do in 20 years time. I feel like, you know, we're asking kids of the age of 5, you know, it's like, what do you want to do? It's like almost the first question when they come out of the womb is, what university do you want to go to? And it's like, no, that's not the question we want to be asking kids. Let them discover. Have fun, play, just be creative, enjoy it. And inhibitions, get rid of them. And in the best possible way, don't care.
Oh, and that is so hard to do. And like you said, in today's social media, it's almost impossible to have that attitude of, I don't care.
Oh my goodness. Absolutely is. I mean, you know, I post a stupid video and the thumbnail of the video is my face in some sort of weird, contorted, ridiculous face. And the next post down is, you know, some model on a beach. And I'm going, what am I doing, Max? What are you doing? Look at you. But you have to just switch that off, and you have to say, no, I'm giving something much better to the world. I'm not trying to influence anyone. I'm just trying to make people laugh.
As you talk to other performers, who would you say, these are people you should know? These are people you should know about.
Oh, there's so many. I mean, I'm a real sort of comedy nerd, so my sort of comedy icons are from across the ages, and I think research is always really important. So there's a lot from history. I mean, in the vent world, Ray Allen to me is the master, because his lips just did not move. He was a genius, and sort of originated so many clever ideas and thought about vent on telly and how he could really, really pinpoint that act and make it work on the small screen, which is great. I'm inspired by people who are just immensely creative. I mean, in the sort of world of family entertainment, I think Christopher T. Magician, his endless creativity is just awe-inspiring. He's just wonderful. He makes me genuinely happy. Mario the Maker Magician, wow. Oh my goodness. The things he does are unbelievable. He's amazing. Again, another true creative mind. It's that sort of thing. It really sparks me. There's also a comedian over here in the UK called Spencer Jones, and he's immensely creative, very proppy, uses sort of looping pedals and makes sort of music whilst he's performing, sort of underlying the stuff he's doing on stage. The creativity from him was unbelievable. The first time I saw him, it was a clip on YouTube of him on an Irish television show, I think. And I was just like blown away by the creativity of it, in stitches laughing, but also like, oh, wow, he's doing something really quite absurd and silly for a mainstream television show audience, and they're loving it. Come on board, hop on board, and we'll have a really good time. And it's that, you know, when you're able to give adults the permission to let down their guard a bit and just laugh at something silly, oh, that's magic. That is actually magic. It's amazing. Matt Ricardo is another person. He's a juggler and just an incredible variety act. He's done some amazing YouTube videos, actually. They are definitely worth checking out in the pandemic. He's done these amazing YouTube videos. They're so wise and so wonderful. And for me personally, a recent discovery of someone I would look up is a ventriloquist called Fred Roby. He's a French ventriloquist. And the creativity is astounding and so ahead of its time. It's unbelievable. So that's been a big one for me. But yeah, those are just a few names of people that blow my mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had to look some of those up myself. And I totally agree with Christopher T. He is incredible, becoming a good friend of mine. And he's actually done an interview that's up live right now. So you have to take a listen.
Oh, I think I know what I'm doing with my afternoon then.
Yeah, he's really great. What about UK audience, American audience? Differences you've experienced or you see?
Well, I've only performed once in America, and that was at the convention, the Ventriloquist Convention, which was just one of the loveliest performances of my life. I mean, I can totally say that, you know, My accent probably did half the work for me. I feel like that the novelty of being a British person really helped me there. But still, they were so lovely. It was it was amazing to walk out in a room where there wasn't. I felt the pressure, of course I did, because there were people who I really admire in the audience. But the warmth of the room, it was sort of like I'd never been there before, but it was a home crowd already. They were rooting for you from the moment you stepped on stage. That was lovely. And I think the enthusiasm of American audiences is something that's really prominent. I think they're, you know, and any clip I watch of some standoff on like Conan or something, like between every other joke, there's an applause break or just cheering. And I'm like, that doesn't happen here. That doesn't happen. You don't get people whooping at jokes. You don't, you know, why did the chicken cross the road to get to the other side? Woo, 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 yeah, woo. You don't get that. That's although I think some of that is beginning to spill over a little bit over here. But yeah, I think British audiences are, I wouldn't know how to describe them because they're just sort of what I know. I think they'd probably be described as, I think sarcasm prevails more in the humor over here. There's definitely a difference. I don't know if British audiences are more judgmental. I haven't played enough real life American audiences. I don't know if they're a bit more sort of arms folded, prove yourself to us, entertain us, dance monkey dance, than American audiences. But yeah, I mean, hopefully I'll get to experience a few more American audiences in the future, and I can come back and I can give you a better answer.
Well, I would definitely say that the accent is a help when you
Isn't
go
it?
To it's my wife heard you. I was watching one of your videos and she goes, "Who is that?" I said, "This guy named Max over in the UK. I love his voice." I'm like, oh. But hey, what about the idea of success? How would you describe success for you?
That's a really interesting one because people, it's something that comes up quite often in conversation, and people, you know, you'll say, people will say, what's your goal? You know, what's the ultimate goal for you? And I really struggle with that question for ages, because it's not like a corporate thing where it, again, it cannot be measured on a spreadsheet. It's, I don't want to like sell a company off for a certain amount by the age of whatever. I do, you know, it's, I mean, can you tell I don't know how the corporate world works? But yeah, I think success for me is definitely going to be more creativity based. And of course, I could say things like, "Oh, the raw variety would be an absolute goal of mine." I mean, that'd be an incredible thing to do. That would be a full, like a lifetime achievement. That wow. But more generally, I think I measure my success by if I'm performing what I want, and if I'm making people laugh, and lots of people laugh. That is literally it. I mean, that's it. That is it for me. I mean, that when people say, "Oh, what's your goal? What's your end game?" And they expect, you know, have my own TV show. And yeah, that would be incredible. And that would be part of that goal probably. But I think for me, how I define it would be, I want to be making as many people laugh as possible. I want to be performing and being silly and able to do that for a living. And I want to be able to surround myself with the creative minds that I like. That's the goal. If I can get enough sort of status, I suppose, in an industry where I can go, I want that person on my team. I want them to come with me. That would be amazing, just because it would be like an amazing little group of people. I want to take people with me on the journey. I want to, yeah, I just want to, yeah, make as many people laugh, essentially. That's what it boils down to.
That's great. And I think that, you know, when you have that stated goal, I want to make people laugh, I want to be creative, then the business part of that's going to come along for the ride.
You're totally right. I think when you've got something like that that is not a numbers goal. It's not an on paper goal as such. Other things will just fall into place. And it also means you don't have to specify and sort of funnel yourself into a very narrow thing that can come about through many various things and be fulfilled by many various things. And I think that's important. I like the variety of the job. I like the fact I can be doing, you know, I can be, you know, performing at a convention like CAC, so I can be performing at a holiday park for 500 people, or I can be on the flipping television, which is mad. You know, that variety is unbelievable. So I think you're right there, absolutely.
What about continuing education? Are there some books that you would recommend to performers, websites, things like that?
Well, I think the idea of continuing education is something that isn't talked about enough generally. So I think the fact you've even used that phrase is very important, because you can't, especially with, again, a creative thing, you cannot just say, "Oh, I've learnt it now. There's no past tense learnt. Stop it." it's learning. You know, you are always learning. From every gig you will learn something. You literally every gig you will learn something. If you're not being self-aware enough, which is important. Self-awareness is very important. But yeah, one second, my train of thought has gone to another station. I think it's been diverted. There's leaves on the line or something. The train system is awful here in the UK. Continuing education, I have always been someone who looks back a lot. I used to watch loads of clips of old ventriloquists. I tried to watch everything I could and just absorb everything as a kid, you know, because it's all inspiring, and you have to look at that and you go, right, okay, so that's what's been done. How do I add to that? How do I originate from that? So looking back, not to imitate and not to stagnate an art form, but to sort of progress the art form, I think is so important. So the internet, for a website, I'd recommend Google. And I would just say Google as much as you can, and go on tangents as well. So go, I've watched that ventriloquist, and in the sort of suggested videos, there's another act from that same variety show, but they're a juggler. Okay, I'll go on that juggler, and you look at that juggler, and then you go to this, you end up like watching some clown act from Russia from the 1970s, and you're like, this is amazing. So follow rabbit holes. I think that's really important with research and development. Research and development. There's another corporate term. Look at me. I need a spreadsheet. I need another PowerPoint and a pie chart. There we are. Books I would recommend. Oh my goodness, there are so many. I mean, I can't recommend this book because I haven't read it yet, but literally beside me, I've got my next book I'm reading, which is called Humor, A Very Short Introduction. It was very sleek, isn't it? The Very Short Introduction series is from the Oxford University Press, and it's by a guy called Noel Carroll. I've just plugged his book. Don't know what it is. Don't know what it's like. Could be rubbish. So I'll cover all bases there. That book, right, I'll do two sound bites for you. This book is rubbish. And then another one. This book is brilliant. You should buy and read it. There we are. There's covered all bases there. I tend to look on eBay a lot. Another thing I've been doing is old joke books. Robert Alban was a prolific joke writer and had many gag books for magicians and variety acts and compares and MCs and speech writers. And you can get sort of his old books on eBay and the like. And they're really interesting because obviously some of the jokes are incredibly outdated, but you have to stomach that. But you can not only learn more about joke structure, and it's interesting to read and interesting to see what's gone before again, but you can update lines. You know, you can say, right, okay, I'm going to change, you know, that line about the army. There was a line about the army, and I can't even remember it now, so this is going to be a really good anecdote. There was a line about the army, and he did like a rule of three about army uniforms and how, you know, they were stingy with the sizes. And it was like there was too big, too small, and another one, another kicker to complete the rule of three. And I went, right, that's a nice structure. The rule of three is a nice structure. I have learned that. What can I do with this structure? I like that, too big, too small, those being the sizes you can get. So, you know, I put a line in my show, which isn't in my show anymore. It was just a little throw-in line, just something nice and witty to walk between a suitcase and another suitcase for you to get a puppet. Is, oh, you like my jacket? Yeah, I got it online. I can't usually order stuff online. It never fits me. Usually the only stuff you can get on, and I used a sort of website name that wouldn't refer over, but usually the only size on there, they never have my size. It's usually either too big, too small, or out of stock. Those are the only sizes they have, you know. So using out of stock as a kicker of an example of a size. I've explained that very poorly and told it very poorly. I'm actually a comedian professionally. But I think that's important. So Robert Alban's books I would recommend. YouTube, Google, you absorb stuff and get inspired by it. There's no need to imitate or copy. And you know, imitation, actually, for young performers, imitation is absolutely fine. I think that's perfectly fine. You know, to actually feel what it's like to do something that you know works, or an idea that you've seen. I think that's fine, but not as a professional. You need to be originating your own stuff if you're doing it professionally. Yeah, continuing education is so important, and something that I think I would encourage everyone to become a nerd. Everyone should just be nerdy about it.
All right. Well, Max, as we get ready to wrap this up, I want you to, if you were talking to performers again, which we are, top three things you think are necessary to be successful.
Right. Now, Keith, I'll be honest with you. I'm really bad at top threes. It's that thing of pinpointing down the best of the best. And it's like, oh, no, I can't do that. I guarantee you I will come off this Zoom call and go, no, I should have said that. But here's what's on my mind at the current moment. I'm going to talk in terms of, certainly for two of them, I'd say these are for being a good entertainer on stage. These are the things that I think are really important. Generosity, that's one, and that's a word I wouldn't have associated with entertaining for a while, but in recent years I've sort of learned it in a new context of being sort of generous with your energy as a performer and giving a generous performance. It's that phrase, and really looking at what that means. It's not performing and going through the act. It's not passively performing. It's not performing at the audience. It's performing for them, with them, giving your performance. And I think giving that generous energy so that you're, you know, that gives you then more enjoyment in yourself, gives them more enjoyment. You're in the moment. It also means you're able to adapt to situations that happen at a gig. I think generosity as a performer is really, really key, giving a generous performance. Originality, I mean that's probably something that a lot of people would say, but playing around, I think connecting to, especially, well, even if you didn't have it as a hobby, but I find, especially as someone who started out with this job as a hobby, it's really important to reconnect with why you played with it in the first place. Why was this fun for me in the first place? Where did that passion come from? What sparked me there? Reconnect to that. Reconnect your creativity, essentially, and go from there. Because when your hobby becomes your job, it can be difficult. And that brings me on to my third one, which isn't necessarily a sort of a key thing for entertaining on stage. But and I don't know if this is one of the top three things, but it's just hasn't come up anywhere else, and I need to put it in somewhere because I think it's important, and it's a bit honest, and it's not very sort of philosophical. It's a very honest one. Get a hobby, for goodness sake. Get a hobby. Find another interest, because it sounds very harsh, but and you know, I mean, this is definitely personal opinion. Some people might like to be totally absorbed by it, but it's not just a job, is it? I mean, I see my purpose as making people laugh. I can't just treat this as a job. It isn't. It's a 24/7 lifestyle. It is my everything. And this is why social media became my outlet, is because I had the need. I had the need to entertain people. So it has taken over my life. It is, you know, when your work is your life and your life is your work and you can't switch off and you don't get home and hang up your coat and then you can switch off and watch the telly. You know, I'm watching the telly and I'm analysing that comedy show. You know, I can't just watch comedy and enjoy it. You know, I'm thinking about it. I'm actively analysing it. So I get a hobby. My goodness. This is essentially, I'm just going to listen to this podcast back myself just for this last section, because this is just advice for me. Get a hobby, because when you've had it as your hobby and it's become your job, you may experience, I certainly have at times, and the pandemic hasn't helped, that slowly but surely and unnoticeably, because it's in such small chunks, but the joy of it slowly drops away until you're left in a pit going, this is the thing I love. This is what I love doing, but I'm not happy at all. Why am I not happy? This is what I love. This is what I love, isn't it? This is. And then you have to remember, hold on. You've just been with it too long. You haven't been able to escape it. You need to, again, play around, reconnect with that fun. But also sometimes you need to switch off and get a pair of binoculars and do some bird watching or knit or crochet or something that isn't an old person hobby. But those are the first ones that sprung to mind. But yeah, it's an odd piece of advice, I know, but I think an alternative interest, another hobby, even if you force yourself, like the other day, I forced myself to listen to a podcast about the history of the UK currency. I mean, how niche is that? Or niche? I don't know. But yeah, I had to force myself to listen to something that was not related to what I do at all and find that other interest. And actually, that ended up sparking my creativity again, because I wasn't thinking about it too much. The pressure wasn't there. That constant pressure as a creative going, you could be writing right now, you could be creating right now, you should be doing more all the time. That can be really oppressive. So get that escape for yourself. Be kind to yourself. Be good to yourself, guys. Hashtag be kind. Go on, be kind to yourself. Get a hobby. Bye-bye. Yeah, that's it.
I think there's a real truth to that you can get so one attitude focused that it just destroys the love of what you do.
Yeah, and that'll actually impact on your work as well as you personally. So it's beneficial for the work as well to actually take some time away from it sometimes, which is counterintuitive, but I suppose true.
Really good. Well, Max, I have enjoyed visiting with you and getting to know a little bit more about you. I will definitely jump on some of your social media sites and take a deeper look at what you've been doing. I would encourage everybody to do that. It's really at Max Fulham on everything. Just look for that. Make us laugh, Max.
Thank you very much, Keith. Thank you for letting me talk at you.
Oh, well, thanks a lot, Max. Glad you were here today. If you like what you've been hearing on this podcast, I invite you to go wherever you're listening to this episode and leave us a comment or review. Tell me what you love about this episode, or better yet, tell me what you want to hear more of in the future.